Our next topic is setting up client accounts and avoiding conflicts of interest. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to MCLE Connie Vecchione. Attorney Vecchione is Bar Counsel at the Office of Bar Counsel at the Board of Bar Overseers. Ms. Vecchione was appointed to this position in 2007, last year. She has been with the Office of Bar Counsel, though, since 1980, originally as an Assistant Bar Counsel and then as First Assistant Bar Counsel. Ms. Vecchione is a 1970 graduate of Brandeis University and a 1974 graduate of Northeastern University School of Law. She was previously a law clerk with the Mass Superior Court in 74 and 75 and in private practice from 1975 to 80. Ms. Vecchione also taught professional responsibility as an adjunct professor at Suffolk University Law School from 1988 through 1995 and served on the Council of the Small Firm Management Practice Section of the Mass Bar Association from 94 through 96. Attorney Vecchione is also the author of numerous articles on ethics for Massachusetts bar journals and is a frequent lecturer here at MCLE and in other CLE providers as well. She's also an active member of the National Organization of Bar Counsel and a frequent panelist at its semi-annual meetings. Attorney Vecchione, thank you very much for doing this and welcome back to MCLE.
Thank you. Okay, I am going to begin by talking about trust accounts, and trust accounts are, bluntly, the third rail of bar discipline, and the one thing that if you are setting up a private practice or if you are part of a private practice, you need to be absolutely Caesar's wife. You need to be completely pristine in your management of your client trust account. There are material. I'm not sure what materials are in your book because the book, the forms that they gave me aren't put together yet, and I didn't have a chance to put them together. But there are materials on our website, which is mass.gov/OBCBBO. Just go to mass.gov and look for Board of Bar Overseers. There are materials on our website on trust accounting that pretty much take you through it, soup to nuts, including, in particular, a very helpful booklet that the IOLTA Committee publishes that, you know, tells you pretty much everything you need to know about trust accounting. Let me go through some of the specifics with you because they are all important. And as I say, if you have any concept of going into private practice, whether you're going into private practice now or whether you're going to go 5 years from now, if 5 years from now you set up a private practice, I want you to have it in not the back of your head, but the front of your head, that this is something that you need to pay strict attention to. We have a detailed record-keeping rule that went into effect in 2004. There are about half the states have similar detailed record-keeping requirements. I keep repeating when I give these talks that they've had this type of rule in New Jersey for about 25 years, and if they can manage it in New Jersey, we can manage it in Massachusetts. First thing, let me just briefly discuss what I mean by trust funds. What are trust funds and what isn't? Trust funds, funds that must go into a trust account, a client trust account, cannot be an IOLTA account, however you want to call it, cannot be commingled with your office money or your account with your spouse or your partner. Trust funds consist of money such as settlement funds, mortgage proceeds, a retainer, and by a retainer I mean an advance payment of a fee that you have not yet earned. So the client gives you a retainer of $2,500 that you're going to charge to the client at $200 an hour. At the time you get it, you put that money in your trust account, your IOLTA account. As you bill the client, you can withdraw the fees that you've earned, but you cannot take the whole $2,500 and put it in your personal account or your office account until it is earned. So those are the types of monies that I mean by trust accounts: judgments, settlements, mortgage proceeds, escrow funds, estate assets. Some of these have to be kept in IOLTA accounts, which are pooled trust accounts for short-term money, money that's either money that's nominal in amount, but that's not really the issue. The real issue is that it's short-term money, money that's going to go in and out quickly. If it's money you're going to be holding for a longer period of time, yet in trust, you have to hold it in an individual trust account for that particular client. So estate funds, for example, when the person for whom you made the will has died and you're handling the estate, that money goes into an estate account that's just for that particular estate. It isn't pooled with your short-term client funds. Okay, that's what we mean by trust funds. What we don't mean by trust funds, and let me be very clear on this, is money that is to which you're already entitled. So that if you're paid a fee in arrears, in other words, you do the work, you bill, the client pays you, that money not just isn't trust account, it not just shouldn't go into trust account, it can't go into trust account. So you do the work on a divorce, you send the client the bill for $1,000, they send you a check, you've earned that money already, that has to go into your office account or your personal account or your pocket. I don't care, your accountant might, but I don't. But it cannot go into your trust account. So be very clear on that, that there, and once you've earned money is another point. So you've got the retainer in your trust account, or you've settled a contingent fee case. You settle a contingent fee case for $12,000, your fee is a third, $4,000. You can't leave your $4,000 sitting in your trust account, that's commingling. Once you've earned the money, you must withdraw your fee. I'm not saying, you know, you have to run around within 10 minutes and withdraw it, but within a reasonable time, a few weeks, you must withdraw your fee from the trust account. So if you've earned fees against retainers and you bill once a month, that's fine. If you have a fee on a contingency case, as you're dispersing the funds to the clients and the medical providers, you write yourself a check for your fee. In all of these cases, obviously, you have to wait for the check to clear. So I don't want you to think that by saying you must withdraw your fees as they're earned, that I'm suggesting you should run around and withdraw monies the day you deposit them. Insurance companies, I hate to say it, but real estate lenders, these all have been known to crash and burn. So you need to make sure that any money that you get clears in your account before you withdraw it. But once you withdraw it, you're not allowed to leave fees sitting in your trust account beyond a reasonable period of time. That, too, constitutes commingling. All right. Now, the central focus of the trust account rule, which is Rule 115 of the Massachusetts Rules of Professional Conduct, the central focus is the requirement that you be able to document the complete history and disposition of client funds. When you keep your records in accordance with the rule, you're going to know at a glance exactly how much money you're holding for any given client and how you got to that figure. If you can't, you know, immediately go to your records and say, I'm holding $313.22 for Mary right now, and not only that, be able to see exactly how you got to that $313, that you took in $500, you paid out $100, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If you can't do all that at a glance, you're not keeping your records in accordance with the rule. So let's go over some of the requirements of the rule. First of all, there are the so-called operational requirements. No withdrawal from a trust account can be made by a check that is not pre-numbered. So, no counter checks. Starter checks are just for starters, and usually they have a number pre-printed on them anyway. But in any event, you know, beyond starter checks, you must use pre-numbered checks. You cannot go up to the counter of the bank and say, I don't have my IALTA account with me. You know, could I have a counter check? Secondly, no withdrawal from a trust account can be made by a check payable to cash or to bearer or any designation of that sort. The reason for this is obvious. You need to be able to track the disposition of trust funds. It's not like your personal funds where it's all yours. So there's no checks can be made payable to cash. And along the same lines, no withdrawal can be made in cash. No withdrawal can be made by an ATM. Same problem. You need to be able to track what happens to the funds. If the withdrawal is made in cash or made from an ATM, you have no idea. I mean, you know, the lawyer can say, oh, I withdrew the money in cash and I gave it to the client. The client says, I didn't get the money. So you cannot withdraw funds in cash. You cannot make checks out to cash. And when you're paying yourself, so for example, you've got the contingent fee that's coming to you, that $4,000 I described, or you've earned $500 of that $2,500 retainer, you're writing a check to yourself from your IALTA account. That check has to be payable to you or to your law firm. You cannot use money that is coming to you directly to pay your own bills. You have to move the money to your office account or to your personal account. With a check that's payable to you or to the law firm, and from there you can go ahead and pay your office rent or your kids' tuition or the video store or whatever you want to pay, but you must first write the check to yourself or to your law firm from your trust account. That is the only way that you can pay yourself, is with checks that are payable to yourself or the firm. Okay, accounting requirements next. You're required to provide a full written accounting of trust funds upon final distribution of trust property, so when the case settles and you have to do a final accounting. Any time upon request of the client or the other person for whom you're holding trust funds or escrow funds, you have to do a written accounting when someone asks you, and when you're withdrawing fees. So when you're withdrawing fees, you have to give an accounting of the retainer. Now, also on or before the date when you withdraw funds to pay fees, the client has to be sent written notice of the amount and the date of the withdrawal and a statement of the balance that's remaining in the trust account on behalf of the client. So, an accounting always must be done whether or not it's requested when final distribution is made or when fees are withdrawn, and it must also be done at other times upon request. All right, with that background, let's move on to the actual record-keeping requirements. There are two types of records that you're required to maintain. These are the records that you create or the law firm creates, and then there are the records created by the bank. Now, as to the records that you or your law firm creates, these have to be kept contemporaneously. The records must be created when the transaction occurs. So, first of all, you need to have a record of the name and the address of the bank. Eventually, maybe it'll, you know, there'll only be Bank of America or something, and that part will be easy. But right now, you have to, with all these mergers, that's kind of complicated, so you have to keep a record of the name and the address of the bank, the account number, the title, when the account is opened, when it's closed, and the type of account, such as an IALTA account, an estate account, an escrow account, whatever it is. So far, so good. That's easy. Secondly, duplicate deposit tickets. Every time you make a deposit to a trust account, you have to have a duplicate deposit ticket that you retain, and this deposit ticket has to separately list each deposited item and the client for whom the deposit is made. So if you're making a deposit of $900 total, and it's comprised of a check of $300 for Mary, $200 for Joe, and what am I up to, $400 for George, you have to have a deposit ticket that says 300 Mary, 200 Joe, 400 George, total $900, and you must retain that. Third, you have to keep a detailed check register that records the following information chronologically: the date and the amount of all deposits, the date, the check or transaction number, the amount and the payee for all disbursements. This is true whether it's by check, wire, electronic funds transfer, whatever. You must write this into your check register or you will not be able to reconcile your account. So not just checks. If you make an electronic funds transfer, you must write it into the account. If you wire funds, you must write it into your check register. It has to have the date and amount of every other credit or debit, so this might be a charge for new checks or for wiring, something of that sort. It might be the interest credit on the IALTA account. The check register must contain for every single transaction, deposit, or disbursement the identity of the client matter. On my notes, I have this in capital letters. This is the key to being able to reconcile your account properly. Every time you make a deposit, you have to say, this was for George. You know, you make a disbursement, this was for Mary. You know, this here I'm talking about your pooled IALTA account, obviously, where you've got multiple clients' money in the same account. Every time you make a deposit, every time you write a check or a wire, you must write down what case it was on account of, what client it's on account of, what case it's on account of. You can use a numbering system if you identify files by number, whatever. Some unique client identifier, whether it's a name or a number, that will enable you to know this check was on account of this case. And finally, you have to do the arithmetic. You must have the current balance. You can't, as I'm sure a lot of us do with our personal checkbooks, just keep writing things in and never do the addition and subtraction. For your trust account, you are required to do all the addition and subtraction. Now, that's your check register, so that's for all your clients, all right? The next set of records you're required to keep are individual ledgers for each client matter that you're holding funds for. So this is a ledger not just for each client, but for each matter. So if you're doing thousands of collections for Debbie's department store or hundreds of closings for Morton's Mortgage, you have to have a ledger for each transaction, for each collection case, for each closing, not just one big ledger for Debbie's or one big ledger for Morton's. Now, what has to be on the individual ledgers is very simple. It's basically just an accounting. It has to show each receipt of funds on account of that case, each disbursement of funds on the account of that case, and then once again, you have to do the arithmetic. And that's what I meant when I said, you know, you should be able to tell at a glance how much money you're holding on a case. You pull out the ledger for Debbie's versus Smith, and it's going to show you, I took in $1,000, I paid out $200, I'm holding $800 on the Debbie's versus Smith case. One very important thing, and this is part of the rule, the individual ledger can never be negative. If the individual ledger shows a deficit, shows you know, in red, it's a negative number, somewhere you've made a mistake and you need to find it immediately. Either you haven't made a deposit, or at least you haven't written it down on the ledger. Hopefully you made it, but you just forgot to write it down. Or you've made a mistake somewhere and overpaid. You've paid out more than you took in. And if that's the case, it means that you've used another client's money to make this payment. Either that or you're going to bounce a check. So neither of those is a good thing. If you see a negative number coming up on the ledger, you need to stop the presses immediately. You can't say, I'll deal with that later. You immediately need to find out why you're showing negative on Debbie's versus Smith. How come you took in $1,000 but have paid out $1,200? Did you forget to make a deposit? Did you forget to enter a deposit? Or did somewhere you make a mistake in arithmetic and pay out more than you've taken in? Either way, you need to find the mistake and correct it very quickly. This is not something that you can let slide. Now, there's one more individual ledger that you have to keep. Those are the ledgers for the clients. You need to keep one more ledger, and that's a ledger for what we call bank charges, which is that when you open the account, you're going to put a little bit of your own money, like $100, $150, $200, probably not more than that, shouldn't be more than that, into the account to cover bank charges, wire fees, new check charges, that sort of thing. You need, in order to reconcile your account, you need to have a ledger that says you put $200 in the account. You can call it your bank charges ledger. You know, it's got opened it with $200. They charged you $50 for new checks. You've now got $150 of your own money in the account. You're allowed to keep just that little bit of your own money in the account, all right? Then, as, you know, more new checks are charged or you incur wiring fees, you might see that you're down to $10 of your own money and put another $100 in your bank charges fund. And then you would enter that on the ledger. So that's kept just like any other client ledger, but in order to reconcile the account, you are going to need to have not just a ledger for each client matter, but you'll need to have that small ledger for that little bit of your own money that you're holding. Now, no panicking on all this. If you're doing this, as you all should be, I'm looking at how young you all are, If you're doing this with a software program, it can be Quicken, works very well. It can be QuickBooks. There are some programs that are made specifically for lawyers' trust accounts that use terminology that's more akin to trust account terminology, but they all work basically the same. Quicken costs about $100 and works very well. If you're doing this with a software program, as long as you enter the information on the check register, the computer will create the ledgers for you. So you create the information, you fill in the check register with all the information I've described, the date, the check number, the amount of the deposit, who the client is. That goes, you can use either category or class on Quicken for that. And then you say, sort it by category, and it will create your client ledgers for you, including your bank charges ledgers. So if you're doing this with a software program, the computer will do everything for you once you have entered all the information that's required, including, most importantly, some sort of client identifier, some sort of unique client identifier. I will point out that if you're doing this with a computer, this is probably obvious, you must enter the client identifier the same way every single time, or the computer will think it's two different people. So don't write George Smith one time and Smith, George another time. It will, assume that those are two different accounts. So you must make sure, if you're doing this computerized, that you have some sort of system that you always keep to Smith, George. A number is useful for that reason, because it's less likely that you're going to create variations. But as long as you're entering the client identifier the same way every time, the computer will create the ledgers, will create the bank charges ledger, and do all the rest of the accounting for you. Bank records, this is pretty easy. You have to keep your bank statements. You have to keep all the records returned by the bank, including the canceled checks or those little facsimiles that some of the banks are sending you. You have to keep records of your electronic transactions, such as your wire receipts, and you have to keep those little deposit receipt slips that they give you as well. All right, now the last piece I want to talk about is the so-called three-way reconciliation that's required by the rule. You have to prepare and retain a reconciliation report not less than every 60 days. Again, the computer will do most of the work for you. What you need to do when you reconcile the account, we call it a three-way reconciliation. You're really reconciling three things two ways. You have to compare, you look at the balance in the check register, so let's say it says you've got $1,100. Then you take the total of all your individual ledgers, including the bank ledger. So you've got $100 in the bank ledger, $300 for Mary, $400 for Joe, and $200 for George. That should add up to the same $1,100 that your check register is showing as your balance. If those things match, okay, you're over the first hump, and then you just take your check register and you reconcile it to the bank statement the same way that you all do at home, right? You just make sure that you adjust for deposits that haven't been credited and checks that haven't cleared, and then the bank statement, too, should match with your check register. Again, if you're doing this with a program like Quicken will walk you through this. It has a little system where you check off things as they're received, and you see the difference going down, and when it reaches zero, it shows you that you've reconciled the account. We do a monthly program over at the Boston Bar where we do what I've described. We do pretty much what I've described here now, but we will show you a demonstration also with Quicken. So if you're interested in more details on how to keep your trust account, you might want to come over to this program. Just call our office. It's on the first Thursday of every month. And it's basically a lot of what I've said to you today, but we do include a Quicken demonstration. And it might help if you want to see this again or if you want to see how it looks on Quicken. A couple of quick topics before I move on to conflicts of interest. Flat fees, I get this question a lot. Massachusetts doesn't require that flat fees be treated as an advance fee that has to go into a trust account. So if you're paid a flat fee for an immigration case or a criminal case, you are permitted to put that into your office account or your personal account. That doesn't necessarily mean that the fee has been earned. It doesn't mean that if you're fired the next day, you're not required by the disciplinary rules to refund the fee, but you don't have to put it in your trust account and keep these kinds of records for it. If you have an individual trust account, like the estate account that I was describing earlier, or an escrow account where you're holding certain funds in escrow in a separate escrow account, obviously for those, your check register is your individual ledger, so you wouldn't need to have a three-way reconciliation. You would just need to reconcile your check register to your bank statement. In other words, if you, you know, the check, am I making sense when I say the check register is the individual ledger? There wouldn't be any difference between, if it's just one client's money, the check register is the same as the individual ledger, so all the reconciliation that's required is from the bank statement to the check register. And this is probably not a problem for any of the people in this audience, but if you find yourself at some point with an existing IALTA account that you cannot reconcile, often, and you know that you've tried, you can't find where the mistake is, it simply won't balance, often our suggestion is stop using that account, you know, for any new matters. You know, just finish up the matters that are already in that account through that account and let it wind down, and start using a new IALTA, open a new IALTA account where you will be properly reconciled and won't keep, I mean, the longer it goes on, the harder it is to find a mistake. So if you have an account that you utterly cannot reconcile, stop using it. Obviously, you have to finish up the transactions that are already in that account through that account. So if you're halfway through a real estate deal, you have to finish the real estate deal through that account. But then for any new matters, use a new account, let the old one wind down, and hopefully you'll be able to find what the problem is.